Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to the Coach and Coordinator Podcast. Throughout this offseason, we've been lucky to have Joel Nellis, the head football coach at Brookfield Central High School in Wisconsin, host a series called Home Team, which focuses on our priorities off the field, our family, our health, our faith, and more. Coach does a great job catching up with coaches from across the country and addressing these priorities. There'll be related links in our show notes at blogs.usafootball.com and check out our systems for the best techniques in tackling, blocking, and defeating blocks at footballdevelopment.com. Let's kick it over to Coach Nellis.
Hello, coaches, and welcome to the Home Team Podcast, where football coaches from around the country provide the coaching community with improvements to their game plans for winning as a husband and a father. Today, we're going to be speaking with head coach from Edgar High School in Wisconsin, Coach Jerry Sins. Coach Sins is one of the most decorated high school football coaches in Wisconsin's history. Coach Sins, a graduate of UW-Stout, began his tenure at Edgar in 1975. Since that time, he's won 419 games, losing only 83. Edgar has won 25 conference championships, 17 undefeated regular seasons, and been to the state championship game 12 times, winning 7 of them. In 2009, Edgar finished as the number one ranked small school in the nation. That year, they outscored opponents 651-20. In 2010, Coach Sin received recognition as a National Coach of the Year. In addition to coaching football, Coach Sin spent 38 years as a JV basketball coach and varsity assistant, winning an additional 500 games at the JV level. He's also been fortunate enough to coach his four sons at Edgar, Jason, Jeremy, Jordan, and Justin. All of them went on to play college football at different levels. His youngest, Justin, is currently on staff as a football coach at Purdue University. He and his wife, Barb, have been married 47 years and are proud grandparents to 9 grandkids. Coach Sins, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Joel.
All right, let's jump right in and start talking about the stars of your home team, beginning with your wife. How did you meet this special woman?
Well, we actually went to the same high school, but we didn't really start dating at all until I think May of our senior year. I think I might have taken her to the prom. I think that was probably like our first date. And we went to different colleges, but we kind of continued dating throughout college, and things just kind of advanced from there.
What is her background? What are the things and passions and interests that she carves out time for?
Well, she has an elementary ed degree, and so she taught kindergarten here at Edgar for, I think, 30-something years. She actually retired back in about 2008, I think, when she was like, 57 or 58. She got out about as soon as she could, and I certainly didn't blame her trying to teach those little munchkins all the time. But she was a very good teacher, and the kids, for years after that would still see her, in church or in a grocery store or something, and come over to give her a hug and things like that, which was kind of neat. But so that's pretty much, what she did as a career. She likes to antique and go to movies and things like that. She spends a pretty leisurely life right now.
Hey, as she should, right?
Right.
She's earned the right to do that. So.
Right.
What is a character trait that has made her so invaluable, for you being a coach?
Well, she loves football. I mean, she screams more during Badger and Purdue and Packer games than I do. And, yells at the TV and at the officials and, I suppose she probably does that during our games too, but I never hear it, of course, because I'm on the sideline and she's up in the stands. But she's watched all our kids play. All of them were really good, high school players, basically all state type guys, and went to college. 3 of the 4 of them played in college too. My oldest son went to University of Wisconsin. He's the only one that didn't play, but the other 3 guys all played college football too. So, And then, of course, the one guy is now coaching at Purdue, too, the youngest guy. Yeah. And then I had another son that coached at Syracuse for a while, Harvard for a while, University of Wisconsin for 7-8 years. So, of course, we attended many of those games, too. So we've been pretty much a football family our whole life.
Sure. Tell us a little bit about your kids. You just shared a little bit about them, their names, their ages. I mean, what makes each of them, you know, what are they up to these days?
Well, my oldest son is Jason, and he's like 46 now. He's a principal at Wausau East High School. He's one that lives closest to us. Wausau is only about 15, 20 miles from Edgar. He actually started out at St. Croix Falls High School, and he was a football coach there and helped coach track. And then he went to Wausau West. And he was an assistant football coach at Wausau West and also a track coach there. And then eventually he decided to get his administrative degree. And then he got the job at Wausau East. So he's a principal. I know he misses coaching. He still kind of works with the coaches. And he's married and has three kids. My oldest granddaughter is going to be a freshman in high school next year now. So they're starting to grow up too. My second oldest son is Jeremy, and he's 44. He went to St. Cloud State University on a football scholarship, was a captain up there and made All-American 1 year. And then when he got out, he coached with us for 1 year, and then he got a call from Harvard. He had a college buddy that was there, and they had an opening, so he loaded up the car and took off for Boston, and he was at Harvard and taking some classes, some grad classes, and coaching there, I believe, for 2 years. And then he got an opportunity to go to Syracuse, and so he went there, I believe, for 2 years. I don't think he took any more grad classes there. And then he got the opportunity to go to the University of Wisconsin under Coach Alvarez, and so then he was there until Coach Alvarez retired. And when he retired, of course, they kind of let most of the guys go as Coach Bielma took over. And so then he got out of coaching, and he actually got into sporting goods sales. And now he's the vice president of sales for the West Coast for BSN Sports. He lives in Temecula, California. And he's up and down the West Coast and into Texas and stuff all the time. He also has Hawaii as one of his, states. So, of course, he gets to go to Hawaii about 3-4 times a year, to supposedly make some sales, but I think he's mainly vacationing there. And
That's got to be tough.
Yeah. And his oldest son is also going to be a freshman next year. They lived in Wanakee when they were in Wisconsin, and they really liked Wanakee, and his kids, like Wanakee and stuff like that. But his oldest son looks like he's going to be, a really good athlete. He's pretty big already. He's in eighth grade, but he's about 6 feet tall and about 170 pounds and plays like tight end and D end, I think. So then my third oldest son is Jordan. He was also a first team All-Stater, played in the All-Star game and stuff in high school. And he had some scholarship offers, but he ended up going to University of Wisconsin Stout just because he really liked the coach there, Todd Strop, at that time. And that's also where I happened to go to college. So that was kind of nice having a guy play at only 100 miles away instead of like St. Cloud or like Purdue, which were longer trips on Saturday. But when he graduated, he graduated with an education degree. But then he only taught like for a half a year and decided he didn't like it that good. So he went back to the University of Wisconsin La Crosse and got a degree in athletic administration. And then he became an athletic director, and he was an athletic director at a couple of schools, I think at Watoma and at Merrill. And then he became principal at our school right here at Edgar. So he was actually kind of like my boss for about 5 years. And then he got a administrator's job in Wisconsin Heights, right down by Madison.
Yeah.
So now he's been an administrator down by Madison the last couple of years. And he's also married, has three kids, and they're all elementary students. And my youngest son, Justin, He was the biggest of all our kids, and he came quite a bit later. He's like 27 now, and he played at Purdue from 2010 to 2014. He was actually Player of the Year in the state of Wisconsin in 2009 when he was a senior. We basically won every game, I think, his sophomore, junior, and senior year in 2008, 9, and 10. And he was actually a quarterback and a defensive back in high school, even though he was really big. He was 6'5", 225, 30 pounds. But when he got to college, they put some weight on him and converted him to a tight end because they had a lot of quarterbacks at Purdue. And he played there and had a good career. And like I said, was a captain. And then since he graduated, he's been coaching there. He was a GA for a couple years. But now he's the head of quality control and offense at Purdue. Things have been a little more fun there the last couple of years with Coach Brahm, and they're pretty exciting and, you know, getting in bowl games again. So it's kind of fun. We're actually going down to Lafayette this Thursday or Friday to babysit. He has one little girl, and then one of his college teammates getting married in Indianapolis. So we're going to go down there and babysit for a couple of days.
What's your advice to him? You know, he's the one that's currently coaching at the college level. What's your advice to him, or some things that carry over maybe from high school, you know, to the college level that you can kind of relate to him, or that, you know, you try to pass along to him?
Well, of course, I always try to tell him you got to be a little patient, you know, at your level. He's, you know, kind of thinks that, you know, maybe he should, he's had a couple opportunities where he thought at one time he was going to get a job with the Kansas City Chiefs. A guy came and interviewed him, and then that one, you know, for whatever reason, didn't work out. And also with the Detroit Lions, I think. So I think he doesn't care whether he's in college or the pros. You know, I think he likes either one. He probably equally as well. I told him I think college might be a little less stressful than the pros would be. And then maybe a little more fun. I don't really know. But I know he's anxious. Like I say, he was a GA for a couple of years, and now he's got a new title. He's still coaching offensive line. That's what he was actually been coaching since he's been at Purdue. So, he has a new title and a new position, and hopefully, I think his eventual goal is probably to be a head coach in college.
Okay, awesome. Next, we're going to move into a section called We Make the Call and discuss how your family has navigated some of the important decisions throughout your career. And it may put some spin on it a little bit, but, you know, how were, with your early negotiations, you know, I call them negotiations with your wife, or how were those initial discussions about, hey, I want to be a football coach, this is what it's going to take? You know, were there anything that, you know, maybe give young coaches advice about if they're having those conversations with their families and their wives about, hey, moving up to being a head coach or, you know, getting started in football, that maybe provide some advice for all of our listeners?
Well, I, of course, always tell all my assistant coaches, too, that, you know, new young guys, my whole staff's practically young guys now, new guys. I mean, I coached with a bunch of guys. Three of my former assistants are now in the Wisconsin Football Coaches Association Hall of Fame. But so we had a bunch of guys that were all close to my age. And of course, all those guys retired, and now my oldest coach is probably, I don't know, in his upper 30s maybe, and all the way down to some guys, you know, only 26, 7 years old. So we got a bunch of younger guys, but I always tell them, guys, it's going to take more time than you think. And so be sure and, you know, let your wife know, make sure your wife's a big football fan. We talk to them about bring your kids to practice if you want to. We don't care if kids are running around to practice. You know, we always have about 8 managers. And, of course, the managers are usually coaches' kids. And those little squirts, they love to come to practice and be around the guys and, you know, carry some dummies around or footballs or water or something. And we try to have family functions together too. You know, we try to get everybody together in the summer, you know, for a picnic, all the wives and kids, and we try to go to a college game in the fall together, and everybody usually can't make it, but most of them can. We have a Christmas party kind of like at the end of the season where we get everybody together, And just recently, we completed our golf outing. That's our big fundraiser, and kind of pretty much all the coaches and wives work at that, which is a hard work day, but it's a fun day. And of course, all the former players come back, so it's fun for the coaches and wives, you know, to see guys that played 20, 25 years ago and stuff like that. But it definitely is something that takes a lot of time. I mean, more time than a person thinks.
Right. You know, you've been at Edgar a long time. Have you ever been offered another opportunity to coach, maybe at the college level or a different high school that would appear to be more, maybe more lucrative? And how did you and your wife talk about those, you know, talk about that job opportunity when it came up?
Yeah, that certainly has been the case. I think the first one was maybe clear back in like 1985 or something like that, when I'd been head coach about 10 years, and we'd gotten to state and won a state championship and stuff like that. And I don't remember if the first position was like maybe at Wausau West High School or something like that, which is close to here. My two oldest kids at that time were, you know, maybe like 12 and 10 or something like that. So of course, you know, I talked it over with them too, as to, you know, whether or not, you know, they wanted to move. Of course, my wife, like I say, was teaching here. She could have continued to teach here. Obviously, we had to debate whether we were going to move, because it was at Wausau. Of course, it would have been close enough for me to drive. I said, well, I think we probably should move. So in the end, we just decided against it. But I know I interviewed at numerous places over the years. I can't remember where all of them were. And a lot of them were, you know, some really, some schools that have turned out to be really, really good. You know, I believe I remember one time getting a thing from Kimberly back, like, you know, maybe around 2000. And because a lot of these, I taught tech ed, and a lot of these schools were looking for tech ed teachers too. And so, of course, if you're a tech ed teacher and also a football coach, that was a pretty good combination for a lot of schools, because there was a shortage of tech ed teachers, and I think still probably is. Yeah. So college-wise, yes, I ended up interviewing for a job at the University of Wisconsin-Stout at one time, which is where I played, and I believe I was down to the final three at that time. So, of course, that would have been a big change, even though Menominee was kind of back near my hometown. I was born and raised in Elmwood, Wisconsin, so Menominee was only about 20 miles from there, so we would have been getting back closer to home. Of course, at that time, my kids were in high school and playing, and once again, I talked it over with them. And in most cases, you know, the kids, they're not crazy about moving, leaving their friends and their teammates and things like that. So in the end, I just decided to stay every time.
Okay.
The money, of course, would have been a little better in some cases, certainly with some of the bigger high schools, but it was never about money. It was just, you know, whether the family would like it and how it would work out and so on.
Okay. Fair enough. The third series of questions we're going to call clock management, and that's how you spend your time to blend family and football. You know, a lot of guys talk about finding time at the college level, more so maybe, you know, weekly dinners with their wife. What's a small thing you do to help your marriage during the season to carve out time for you two?
Well, yeah, we like to, you know, try to go, I mean, early on, maybe, you know, take the kids, go to a movie or go to a zoo or, you know, something like that. My wife, of course, loves shopping, and I'm not crazy about that activity at all. I kind of enjoy golfing a little more, but she likes golfing about as much as I like shopping. So that doesn't work out necessarily that well. We would try to get together with the kids. Obviously, church has always been a big part of our family, because I was born and raised in, you know, Roman Catholic by my family and my parents, and church was always important there. So church was always kind of like an important thing, and our kids went like to parochial schools. So that's always been a part of it. We used to, when we had all the kids at home, we would always have a family meeting at least once a week, and it was usually on Saturday morning. You know, we'd set it Saturday morning at like maybe 8 or something like that. All right, everybody had to be at the dining room table, and of course we'd start right out where each person, you know, got a certain amount of time they could talk. Nobody could interrupt, and you could say anything you wanted to about anybody else in the family. Usually, of course, we talk about keeping it pretty positive, you know, if you could.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of good. I used to kind of like those family meetings because, of course, the kids would always kind of voice some not so positive things about each other occasionally, and then we'd try to get them squared away. I never really had, you know, time really for like hunting or fishing. I have four brothers and they always wanted me to come bring our kids, but oh man, it just never worked out. Playoffs are always the time of deer season and things like that. So I never really ever get into hunting and fishing with my kids, even though they did it with some other friends of mine from town, and a lot of them kind of like to fish now and do it more than I do. Me and the boys, we kind of try to get together and go golfing at least once a year during the summer, you know. And next Saturday night, all of us are going to get together in Milwaukee, all the boys and their wives and their kids and my wife and I, for a Brewer game on the 29th of June. And
awesome.
So, of course, yeah, I mean, you know, the one guy's got to fly in from California with his family, and Justin's got to come up from West Lafayette. And so, we're getting everybody together in Milwaukee next Saturday afternoon for a tailgate party, and then go to the Brewer game and probably go to church on Sunday and then come back home. So we try to do things. It's tough. And of course, I come from a big family myself, with five sisters and four brothers, and we try to get together with my family once a year. I have a little cabin in the woods that me and a couple of brothers share, and we try to get together there, and man, it's tough to find a date where everybody can make it. Of course, I have brothers and sisters spread all over the country too, Florida and Arizona, so some people have to come from a long distance.
I'm sure it's all worth it when you get together, though, right? Add a lot
of
value.
Oh, it is. It's great. We always say, hey, now we got to do this again next year. Make sure we do it again next year.
It's worth clearing the calendar for. You talked about how your, you know, players, your coaches' kids are managers. Any advice on how to handle that well? And, you know, how young is too young? You know, I'm sure you've seen a wide range of kids that have come through and helped, and maybe what value you see adding to their program, not just from the kids' side, maybe your players' side as well.
Well, most of my kids started like when they were in the first grade, in kindergarten. I would tell them, you guys maybe should stay in mom's room and, you know, go home with her when she's ready to go home. But a lot of times she would work at school too until 5:30, 5:45. So a lot of times she wasn't going home until we were going home from practice. So it kind of worked out pretty good. Of course, all my kids are older now and graduated from college and stuff, but I got all these young coaches, and a lot of them have 3, 4, or 5 kids of their own. And so those little guys are out at practice when I didn't have any coaches with kids. It was neighbors' kids and with older brothers, you know, that played on the team. But yeah, we've definitely had our share of squabbles, you know, among the managers where they'd be playing a game or something in our storage shed, and somebody'd end up you know, maybe having an accident, and now we got to take somebody to the hospital for stitches. And that's happened more than once. And of course, parents weren't that happy about that. So eventually we came up with a plan where we'd assign one manager to each coach. We got about 8, 9 coaches, and we'd have about 8, 9 managers. All right. Each coach has one manager. You got to stay by that guy pretty much during practice. Well, of course, that works for about the first half hour of practice or maybe 45 minutes. And pretty soon, of course, the managers are getting together somewhere to have a football game, and now guys are being tackled and thrown down. And so we've had to stop practice a few times to reprimand the managers. But all in all, most every one of those kids ends up being a great player for you because they're just around football all the time, and they're watching guys, and they're learning how to kick the ball and throw the ball. And we've had very few managers that haven't been all-conference players. Most of them go on to college. A lot of them play in college. So all in all, it's been a pretty good thing. And parents want their kids to be managers. We have to turn it down every year. I mean, I have kids write letters of application to become managers. You know, they'll send me a letter and want to know if they can. They'll apply for the job, and I'll tell them, well, you know, we got maybe 14 guys, and we can only take 7 or 8. So, you know, we'll have to see. And so some guys don't make it, of course, and I'll tell them, well, maybe next year when some guys move on to middle school football, then maybe you can become one. So that's kind of the way it's worked out.
That's awesome. The key, high school coaches, the key is to find your talented kids in the program and bring them out as managers, because you've heard it here that they'll be automatically groomed to be all conference players and beyond. you know what? And maybe this has happened to you, maybe it hasn't, or maybe you have young guys. Well, maybe let's talk about the head coach's perspective. A guy in your program has a son or daughter that has an activity, a performance, a game that conflicts with practice, or maybe a meeting on the weekend. How do you handle that with your coach to make sure he can go, or how do you work those things out to make sure he feels okay to go, or, you know, things like that?
Yeah, we always tell them that should come first. We talk that over with the kids too. So we've had kids that have missed games on Friday night because they had an older brother or sister getting married, and they were in a wedding party, and they had a rehearsal dinner, you know, on a Friday night. And of course, if they wanted to go, we just said, hey, go ahead and go. And the same thing with coaches. I actually missed one game. I've missed one game in my career of 40-something years as head coach, and it was only about 2 or 3 years ago. I had a niece who was getting married in Omaha, Nebraska, and her wedding was actually on a Friday night, and her father had been killed in an automobile accident years ago on Christmas Day, and she asked me if I would walk her down the aisle because she'd always been kind of one of my favorite nieces. And of course, I told the other coaches, guys, I can't say no to something like that.
No. Nope.
They were all in agreement. No, coach, you got to go. But just so happened that the game I wasn't at, it rained about 2-3 inches during the game. It was just the muddiest, most miserable game on earth. It was away from home. We ended up winning pretty big, so it was okay. But that's the only game I've ever missed in all the years of coaching. I think I only missed like maybe one practice, two in all those years, and I think that was for a funeral of like a nephew or something. So, but we let the coaches know that no, they're always free. With last year, we had a coach at their family had a summer vacation planned during like preseason football. I told him, hey, no, you go. Your family's got this plan. Believe me, we can get along without you for, you know, 4 or 5 days or whatever. And sometimes we have kids that will be missing some early preseason practices too because their family has a 3-day weekend up north, something at their cottage or cabin. And, of course, they're always aware of the fact that they could get beat out during those 3-4 days.
Right.
Somebody else,
right,
you know, does really well. Well, you may have to earn your spot back when you get home, but we never tell them that they have to stay, you know.
Okay. That's good advice. And like you said, that one situation where you had to miss, you know, that the circumstances dictated, right? You had to be there for, you know, your niece and to walk her down the aisle. And, you know, who gets the credit? Who is the winning head coach that day?
I suppose that would be Coach Strike. You know, he was our defensive coordinator. So I had him a list of about 30 things to remember on a sheet. And after that, he goes, man, I don't want to do that again.
Well, he'll go down as the winningest by percentage coach and varsity coach in Edgar history, right? It'll be 1-0,
yeah.
And, you know, undefeated as head coach. It's a pretty good title. I like it. We talk as coaches a lot about, you know, the person that holds the marker last will win. How do you guys avoid every week being too analytical about the game plan and therefore maybe spending unnecessary time or hours or meetings getting ready for your next opponent?
Yeah, of course, particularly now with, I mean, my assistant coaching staff, I mean, there's 5-6 of them that were college football players, which is very unusual at a small school like us. You know, we have a guy that played 4 or 5 years at St. Norbert's, another guy played 4 or 5 years at Eau Claire, another guy played 5 years at the University of Wisconsin, went to 2-3 Rose Bowls, and won Big Ten championships and stuff like this, you know. So, yeah, we got a lot of assistant coaches that have a lot of experience and a lot of ideas. And, of course, the main thing that we always tell them we have to guard against is not getting too complicated, because just because we can understand it, that doesn't mean that the kids can. I think we may have done a little bit of that offensively last year, maybe gotten a little too, you know, tricky at times. And then I'd have to, like, rein it back in some. But it's fun, but, you know, we've always hung our hat on being a defensive team. And, of course, defense is fun to coach if you're a defensive coach. But kids love – they love offense, and they love new plays, and they love, you know, tricks and doing all this other kind of stuff and, you know, no huddle and spread and all that. So it's tricky getting, you know, a balance. Special teams has always been a big thing. You know, defense and special teams is what we've always tried to emphasize. And as soon as we get a little too involved in offense, then some of those other things start to slip a little bit. So then you have to go back to, you know, your basic philosophy. But it's always fun. And, of course, with all this stuff on huddle now, oh, my God, we have pages and pages, of course, of information and, you know, down and distance tendencies and formation tendencies and time of game tendencies and field position tendencies. And
right.
And so you can have pages of that. Well, we don't give much of that to the kids. We give the kids an abbreviated scouting report, maybe one page on Sunday night, 2 or 3 pages on offensive stuff on Tuesday, and maybe a page on Wednesday about the other team's defense. And, the coaches, yeah, they got a packet, but the players never see that packet.
And is there anything on, you stop it, you know, how do your weekends look? Do you guys manage, do you meet as a staff? You know, how do your weekends look when you're after Friday night? What is your protocol for, you know, helping coaches get time with their families, but also make sure that you have a game plan in place by Monday?
Yeah, that's interesting too. I mean, I've listened to some these head coaches, like from schools in Texas, some of these high school guys, and my God, they spend 10 hours on Saturday, you know, with their staff doing this, and another 4 or 5 on Sunday. And of course, we always try to, we got one tech guy on our staff that handles the huddle stuff, and he gets everything, you know, downloaded as fast as he can. You know, the coaches and the players alike can watch the stuff on their phones if they want. I prefer a bigger screen, so of course I come to school and, you know, watch it in the coach's office on probably a 42-inch, you know, flat screen, so I can see things better. But each coach basically watches film when he wants to on his own on the weekend. On Saturday, and we don't get together until Sunday night at 5. By that time, as a coach, you've written down the notes that you want to bring to the meeting. Of course, the offensive line coach, he's been studying the other team's defensive line, maybe. The defensive line coach has been studying the other team's offensive line, mainly, and so on. The wide receiver coach, well, hell, he's studying the other team's defensive backs, looking for weaknesses. But everybody brings in their, and of course, I break down our own film, and for our meeting, the players come in at 6, and the coaches meet from 5 to 6 on Sunday, and then the players come in at 6, and then everybody meets from about 6 to 8. But the first hour, we go over our own game film with the team we just played on Friday. And a lot of times, I'll have 100 comments from that. Try to keep most all of them positive, you know. And then we go over the upcoming opponent. And, of course, that's assuming the individual coaches now have chances to interject who they think we have to watch for, you know, and offense, defense, and so on. And in the end of that meeting, and each position coach has 10, 15 minutes with his own players. to talk over what he wants to talk over, but we try to always get the players out by 8, and sometimes we can get them out by 7:30, you know, if they have to. Those meetings actually change in time periodically. Like if we have, like sometimes we have confirmation kids that have meetings, you know, at 7, all right, well then we move it up, you know, a little bit. And then, because no, we're not going to interfere with confirmation class or any of that kind of stuff either. But sure. Basically, I try to give all the assistants off from Friday night until Sunday night.
Awesome. The final set of questions we'll call prevent defense, and that's hoping to provide hopefully some bigger picture things that can help prevent a coach from losing what's most important. Could you maybe touch on a struggle you've had to overcome as a family during your career? And what lessons other coaches can learn from it?
Well, I don't know that there's ever been any like really big, you know, struggles that way. I guess maybe the toughest thing for me was like when Jeremy was playing at St. Cloud, most of their games were at noon on Saturday. It was about 240 miles, so it was about a 4-hour trip. So I'd have to definitely get out about 7 a.m. to try to get there at about 11, you know, to be there for warm-up. So then after the game, of course, you'd want to take him out to eat or go out with him and some of his teammates to eat. And so you wouldn't get back until late in the evening. And, of course, now it's Sunday morning church, and, man, when am I going to look at film and get this stuff done? And so there were times when, you know, the whole weekend was football. It was the Friday night game, the Saturday game, and it was tiring for me, and probably not all that pleasant for my wife either, if she had some other things she wanted to do. And of course, then it got worse when Justin was playing at Purdue, because now he had 420 miles to go. Now it's a 6 to 7 hour trip. So basically, we'd have our games on Friday night. I would get home at, you know, 11:30, 12 o'clock, sleep for 3 hours maybe from 11:30 to 2:30, 3 a.m. Okay. 3 a.m. we basically had to be on the road because, of course, they're Eastern time too, so we'd lose an hour getting there. And sometimes they played at 11 a.m., so, oh, my God. So now you drive to Purdue, and now you got to take him out afterwards too and now try to come back. A lot of times I'd stay, but then if I stayed out, we'd have to leave early on Sunday morning. Then I'd barely get back to town an hour or two before our meeting. So that got to be a struggle. Physically demanding. I operated with not much sleep for 4 or 5 of those years. But yet our team never seemed to suffer much. You know, we managed to keep playing at a high level during all that.
Well, and I think that's good for coaches to hear because I think, you know, they need to hear that, right? You are the magic, right? I mean, I think a lot of the head coaches would agree that, you know, the head coach has to be the guy that's leading the charge. But at the same time, if you hire good people and you bring the right people along, taking care of your family in terms of your obligations to go to the game and things like that, things will get done, right? And you can still maintain a high level of performance, you know, while still taking care of your family. And that's kind of the goal of the podcast, just to kind of illuminate those things. So even despite your fact that you might have been rolling into a Sunday night meeting with maybe a couple hours of film, because, right, I mean, even when my timeline serves me correct, like even when Justin was playing, you know, mobile huddle wasn't even a thing at that point, right? Like it wasn't.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so it's not like you were sitting there in the car watching film, right? Like you were the one, you might not have seen the film until you got back on Sunday night. You know, and so I think that's important for guys to know. This is not all that you know, it's more recent, right? Justin being, you know, young college coach.
Yeah, he played from 2010 to 2014 at Purdue, yeah.
Right. But guys forget, like, even during that time, there wasn't huddle access. You still had to be landing, you still had to be connected. You still had to, right? You may even have VHS at that point. Like, you know, you never know. But, so I think that is important for guys to hear. You know, you did make it work. And I'm guessing your staff wasn't sitting there questioning your commitment, right?
No, because, of course, I tell them all the same thing. And, of course, we have players playing in college now. We got, you know, guys at different universities, guy at Bemidji, guy at St. Cloud, and so on. And some of them are nieces or nephews of some of the coaches. And I'll say, guys, no, if you want to go, go. We'll stay in touch with our cell phones and over the weekend. And we do that. Sometimes there's a family reunion. Sometimes there's a wedding. Once again, it's kind of like you have to get your work done whenever you can get it done and however you can get it done. Take care of it. I'm okay if you're there or not there. I would say at these Sunday night, you know, get-togethers, out of our 9 coaches, you know, we may have 6 there, we may have 7 there. Usually, obviously, the O coordinator, the D coordinator, myself, yeah, we're all there. but some of those other guys may or may not be there. But it doesn't give them an excuse to not be ready for practice on Monday or things like that, you know. So we've been able to work it out. And, of course, it really helps. It really helps now with having all this stuff that you have and huddling. Every kid having a huddle on his phone. And, of course, the kids will text us questions. Coach, did you see this play or that play? You know, play 121. Or, you know, this guy went in motion and that guy did that. Yeah, we saw that. Yeah, it's good you caught that. so that does really help. It really does.
How has seeing your commitment to your family, do you think, how do you help that? How does that help both your players and maybe your younger coaches grow as men? How do you think it helps in their development?
Well, yeah, I mean, I, of course, want coaches that are, I'm trying to think now too, I have about four or five coaches that played at Edgar. Greg Streit played here, and he was on teams that went to state, you know, state championship type teams. Zach Paul, one of our coaches, when he was in high school, we went to state all 4 years. I'm trying to remember if that, I think that was 98, 99, 2000, and 2001. And so he played at Camp Randall 4 times in high school. And some of the other guys, you know, Coach Trawicki, Coach LaCasco, these guys were good high school players too, and most of them got to play at state and stuff like that. So they saw the way things were done. We always talk about family, you know, coming first, maybe God coming first, and then family, and with the kids, then their classes, you know, and then football. And we've kind of harped on that, you know, philosophy for years. So I think they've developed that way. And like I say, now a lot of our coaches have kids that are like managers, and they come there. We make these little guys listen when coaches talk. You know, each coach speaks to the team during preseason practice. Every day we have a break, and each coach has to have a prepared speech to talk to the team. And the little guys know you guys aren't goofing around during this time. You're over there listening to these speeches. And of course, sometimes it's one of their dads talking, you know, and so they hear the same theme being reinforced that no, guys, your family comes first. You have to take care of those obligations first. And of course, obviously God, and, you know, maybe even ahead of the family. And then, you know, that football, yeah, we know football is important, but your grades are even a little more important than football. And so we have very few guys that you ever have grade issues with. We got one or two guys now this year, and of course that's more than we normally have that we may have an issue with starting next fall. And usually it's young guys, you know, like freshmen, they haven't quite caught on it. Guys, no, you cannot have an F at the end of the year. You're going to be ineligible to start next year. And that's more important. And so, and I'm happy with my young coaches. They're all good family guys. You know, you see them in church on Sunday and those kinds of things. And that's what we're trying to stress.
Awesome. What is one thing over the last maybe 3 to 4 years that's helped you be a more effective coach? One thing you've done, taken away, added?
Well, we definitely divide up responsibilities. And I know there's some guys, especially guys, older guys like me, that they like to have their fingers into too many things. And there's too many things to do. So one guy is in charge of the finances and the fees at the beginning of the season. Another guy is responsible for making sure everybody's got their physical stuff and their all their WA requirements in and has read their concussion protocol stuff and understands that and have signed it. And then somebody else is responsible for the managers to make sure they're taking care of their things. And somebody else is responsible for all the huddles and stuff and sending the films to all the opponents and you know, at the right times. And somebody else is in charge of T-shirts and, you know, the, all that booster club stuff. Mm-hmm. And during games, we do the same thing. You know, one guy's responsible for kickoff and a different guy's responsible for kickoff return. Somebody's responsible for punting team. And obviously, we got a defensive coordinator. He's usually the linebacker coach, but he works with the defensive line coach and the secondary coach during the games. And on offense, it's the same thing. Yep. And one coach is responsible for seventh graders and one guy for eighth graders and one guy for ninth graders because we have all those games too. And then we have a couple JV guys and, of course, end of varsity guys. And we tell some of those guys too, you don't have to come to the varsity game if you don't want to on Friday night, but they do anyway because they just want to be there, you know. And, sure. and it works out well to divide up responsibilities and not think that you can do everything yourself because it just becomes too overwhelming.
Right. Good plan. I like how you break it down. The last question, I call victory formation. And when the outside world looks at a coach, they'll judge them based on their wins and losses or accomplishments of their players. But the potential legacy a coach can have on his players and his family is a much more lasting value than anything that really can be measured. What legacy or impact are you striving to create through coaching or football that maybe you couldn't do in any other profession?
Well, I think, you know, the main thing, and of course, I think as coaches get older and older, they become more this way. You know, you become more philosophical and things like that. But people have been asking me for the last 5, 6, 7 years. I retired from teaching probably, I think, in maybe 2014 or 15. I was about 64. And so now, of course, every year, fans of ours plus, you know, people from opposing schools, coach, is this your last year? When are you going to retire and stuff like that? and of course, I've thought about it. And the main thing that keeps me going, I think, is the parents, you know, and the neighbors, the parents, and, you know, the good kids that you have. And the fact that, well, if I retire, you know, I will not be able to influence these kids like I can now and try to teach them about community service and about respect and leadership and staying away from drugs and, you know, things that are going to bring you down. We talk an awful lot about diet and nutrition and rest and health and, you know, doing the right things, making the right decisions. We only have 3 team rules and we stress them all the time. But of course, we make sure that everybody knows them. And the 3 team rules are do what's right, do the best you can, and treat other people the way you want to be treated. And of course, anytime a kid does something that's out of whack with one of those 3 rules, we come back to it. Now, was that the best you could do? Or would you like to be treated that way? And well, then, and of course, we have a motto every year. And of course, last year, our motto was be grateful, be humble, but be hungry. And of course, everybody gets a shirt with that, and if somebody does something, it's, you know, somebody starts complaining about anything, oh, now are you being grateful for, you know, this? Or if anybody tries to get a little cocky during a game, wait a minute, part of our motto is be humble, You know, you score a touchdown, you hand the ball to the official. You don't have to dance in the end zone. you know, all these kinds of things are things that we try to stress, you know. And I realize that being a head coach, yeah, you can have influence on a lot of people. And I'm most proud when I see former players. I mean, at the golf outing we just had, you know, on the 8th of June, and many, many former players, college grads, married, you know, with families, good jobs, you know, engineers, doctors, things like this. Yeah. And they'll come back and say, hey, coach, the most fun I ever had was playing football in high school. I learned more playing football in high school than I did in 4 years of college, or sure, things like that. You know, those are the things that are most rewarding. And of course, they're obviously not talking about plays in offense or defenses we ran or any of that kind of stuff.
No doubt. Well, Coach, we really appreciate it. It's been awesome to talk to you. Obviously, you know, won a ton of games, had a lot of success, but obviously you've still managed to keep, you know, the main thing, your family and your faith, a priority. And I think that's, you know, we all strive to do in making an impact. We hope you keep doing it for a lot longer, and we wish you the best of luck in this upcoming season.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please check out all we're doing on Twitter at our Twitter handle for coaches at FBDEVCoach. Check out our systems for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling at footballdevelopment.com. If you register there with your email address, you can get access to our shoulder tackle system, the entire system, as well as 3 free videos of your choice, either from advanced tackling or from our contact system, which is blocking and defeating blocks. This is some of the best stuff, some cutting edge stuff, I think, that you're going to find is very efficient and effective in the way you teach your players. And there's a lot of drills here that help you improve that skill year round. Check it out at footballdevelopment.com. Check out our coaches' notes on usafootball.com. Go to the resources tab for development and training. Our coaches' notes are given to us by coaches around the country, state champs, some of the NCAA leaders. Those guys have been doing a great job in putting that together in our tips format, which is teach, install, and problem solve. And in there, we also have further review, which we allow our clips to be downloadable, and you can download those and put them into your Huddle. No need for an extra subscription to a Huddle page. So check those out. And as always, go to blogs.usafootball.com for our show notes, our analysis, articles, and coaching. Finally, if you're enjoying the podcast, head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review. It really helps out the podcast.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.